Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time, dig out the truth written between. Her hair still brick, cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining us today for Her Story number 27 is writer Karen Abbott. Karen is the author of two New York Times best-selling books, Sin in the Second City, and American Rose. She's a featured contributor to Smithsonian Magazine's history blog, Past and Perfect, and also writes for Disunion, the New York Times series about the Civil War. To find out more about Karen's work, you can visit her website, karenabbott.net. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
And which woman in history have you chosen to share with us today?
I want to talk about Emma Edmonds, who was a female Civil War spy and someone I've really become interested in over the past year or so as I've been researching the Civil War.
Well, please tell us all a little bit about Emma Edmonds.
She was born Sarah Emma Edmondson in New Brunswick, Canada in 1841, and she was called Emma for short. And she had quite a rough upbringing. She had four older sisters and a brother, and her brother was epileptic, which was a source of constant strain in their family. Their father was a sort of stern disciplinarian farmer who always wanted, you know, a slew of male children to help him run, do all the chores and take care of the animals and inherit his farming business, and was really disappointed when each child turned out to be a girl and the fact that his one son was sort of sickly and weak. And Emma, you know, responded to this in a way that, you know, would shape her for the rest of her life. She became a tomboy. She was always the one to break the wild colts. She would climb up to the roof if it needed fixing. She was an expert with horses. She knew how to jump really well. She was an expert marksman. She could shoot better than any boy in her neighborhood. And she sort of prided herself on these qualities and really worked to improve them as she got older. But she was terrified of her father. He was very violent. He would beat her. He would beat her sisters and her brother. And this made Emma furious. She was really protective of her brother. And it also really shaped her views of men, which again would sort of follow her throughout her life. And she actually said in her memoir, you know, in our family, the women were not sheltered but enslaved. Hence, I naturally grew up to think of man as the implacable enemy for my sex. I had not an atom of faith in any one of them. So this would prove to be very interesting later on because Emma would impersonate a man. But we'll get to that in a minute. One night when she was 13, a peddler knocked on the door of their farm, and the mother invited them in for the evening. They made him supper and gave him a place to stay. And before he left, he handed Emma a novel, and it was called Fanny Campbell, the Female Pirate Captain. And it was a sort of melodramatic story of a young New England girl who in the 18th century fell in love with a sea captain. And it was sort of popular, you know, trashy literature for the day. But Emma really was excited by this. She had never read anything but the Bible before. And she took it as a sign that this peddler gave this book to her and not to one of her sisters. And the protagonist, she took a particular liking to. It was a young girl who fell in love with this pirate, and one day he was the victim of a mutiny out at sea, and he was taken prisoner in the Caribbean. And to rescue him, she had to cut off her curls, put on breeches, and go out to sea and look for him. And she, you know, Emma just loved this story. This woman eventually rescued her lover, and they lived happily ever after. And from then on, Emma began dreaming of her own escape. So meanwhile, her father was marrying off her sisters one by one, and Emma discovered when she was about maybe 17 or 18 years old that her father had promised her to be married to a neighbor, this elderly farmer. And Emma, of course, was terrified by the prospect of this. You know, there was nothing, no fate worse than this to her. So one night she had decided to escape, and she left in the middle of the night. She cut off her hair. She bound her breasts, and she dressed as a man. And she already sort of had male mannerisms. As I said, she was a tomboy growing up. And growing up on a remote farm, she was not really tutored as a city girl would have been on how proper ladies moved and how they sat and how they acted and how they spoke. So she sort of had an advantage in that regard. And she began calling herself Frank Thompson and answered an ad for to be a Bible salesman and proved really successful at this. She bought herself a very fancy carriage and boasted about squiring young ladies around town. She actually, you know, developed this reputation as a ladies' man, ironically. Of course, courtship was an entirely different enterprise back then, you know, mostly consisted of chaperoned walks and witty conversation, which she would have excelled at, but there was no real situation in which she could have been discovered under the confines of Victorian courtship. But it was risky for her to do this. Against British law, it was a crime to impersonate a man at the time. And she wouldn't necessarily have been jailed. These laws weren't really enforced, but she would have been sent back to her father, which probably to Emma would have been a fate worse than jail. So she went on selling her Bibles and never was detected and went from state to state, eventually leaving Canada and going into the United States. And she found herself in Detroit, Michigan, and then to Flint, where she continued her business. But of course, at this time, it was around 1860, 1861, the winter of 1860, 1861, and the war was imminent. You know, you couldn't escape the fact that there was something was going to happen and soon. And as soon as the fall of Fort Sumter occurred in April of 1861, Emma decided that she had to do something. She was opposed to slavery on religious and humanitarian grounds, and she, you know, had very progressive views for the time. Was naturally disposed to side with the North in this. And she asked herself, you know, what part am I to act in this great drama? So it wasn't just a matter of Emma feeling that slavery was wrong and wanting to do her part. She also had this sense of adventure and just wanted to jump in and see what would happen. So she went to a recruiting station in Flint, Michigan, after Lincoln called for 75,000 volunteers. And she signed up to enlist as a soldier named Frank Thompson, which was the name that she had also been using as a Bible salesman. It was sort of who she had come to be. She now identified herself as being Frank Thompson more than she ever identified with being Sarah Emma Edmondson. And the physical exams, I found this really interesting, were much less rigorous than they are today. One soldier at the time described his physical exam for getting into the Army as, quote, given a series of love taps on the chest. You know, the doctor just tapped his chest. Basically, they wanted to make sure that your hand was in working order so you could properly shoot a gun, and they wanted to make sure you had enough teeth with which to tear off cartridges. I mean, they were the two main things. Nobody really cared if you had a disease or if you were ill. You just had to be able to shoot a gun and tear cartridges off with your teeth. So Emma passed that test easily. She only had one moment of danger during this exam. The doctor picked up her hand, which of course, you know, was delicate and small compared to the men's hands that were he had examined. And he said to her, "What sort of living has this hand earned?" And she just replied, "Sarah, I have spent most of my youth getting an education." But she passed, and she was officially a member of the 2nd Michigan Infantry. So she went off to basic training in Washington, D.C. as a member of the Army of the Potomac, which, of course, was the main federal army in the Eastern Theater of the War. And she wasn't the only one. Historians now think that about 400 women posed as soldiers in the Civil War on both sides, but mostly for the North. And it was sort of easy for them to do this on some levels. Men often, you know, they were drilling constantly. They were always in motion, except at night when there was some downtime. But they had to be up very, very early in the morning for drills. And a lot of them also, you know, were not sleeping with blankets. They would sleep in their clothing. And so she wasn't stripping down to her linens. She was leaving, a lot of them even left their boots on. So they were leaving their clothes on for the most part. They were, you know, would go off to the latrines to do their business or go off into the woods. It was likely that her menstrual cycle stopped as a result of her poor diet and the stressful conditions and the fact that she was, you know, they were moving around constantly. And interestingly, you know, men had no concept of what a woman would look like in pants for the most part. So it wouldn't even occur to them that, you know, seeing this person in pants, it could be a woman. It was unheard of. And so they weren't looking for it. And so they missed it. That said, a lot of them, you know, did make fun of her exceptionally small feet and they called her our woman. And there was a lot of good natured jesting, but nobody really called her, suspected that she was a woman, at least not at first. And I like thinking about how awkward and difficult this must have been for her at times. Camps were not maybe the most moral of places, and especially with somebody with Emma's religious upbringing, it had to be really abhorrent at times. There were prostitutes everywhere. You know, people were getting VD. People were going down, you know, going down the line to visit brothels in the cities and coming back with all sorts of sordid stories. And I'm sure all of this made Emma cringe. And just sort of really have to reconcile the fact that these are men that she has agreed to fight for and die for, and she was saving their lives as a nurse. You know, she was working at a nurse as a nurse at this point, and yet found them you know, rather disgusting on many levels. But she really embraced her work, and she decided that she had a gift for as a nurse. She could soothe the delirium, as she called it. And her first taste of combat was early on. It was in July 1861 at the First Battle of Bull Run. And she was in charge of bringing up the rear. Her regiment was guarding the retreat once the Union started retreating back toward Washington. And she was really disgusted by the amount of cowardice she saw and by the fact that the Union retreated and that so many men really just sort of gave up. And that was her first taste of battle. And she has proved to be probably one of the bravest ones in her entire regiment. I mean, she worked as a nurse, and she talked about the really visceral experiences of that and just seeing the heaps of amputated arms and legs just piled high, and the way that she had to tell a man he was dying. She thought it was against her moral code to lie to a man if he asked if he was dying, and she always, you know, admitted that, no matter how difficult it was. She buried plenty of bodies, including the bodies of friends, and always clipped the lock of hair to send back to their mothers. So while she's doing this and experiencing combat, and in the early part of the war anyway, the Union losing and sort of dealing with that morale, Emma was actually falling in love, and this is one of my favorite parts of her story. She finds herself really, you know, against all odds and against her code that she can't trust any man, she finds herself falling for a fellow private by the name of Jerome Robbins, who was also mustered into the 2nd Michigan, a different company, back in April. And she finds out that they have a lot in common. He was college educated. She was not college educated, but she prided herself on being well-read and sort of intellectually curious and, of course, moral. And he also was, you know, one of the few men in camp who did not approve of the soldiers going down the line and the prostitution, the sort of cards and drinking and gambling. He was against all of those vices as well. And so they bonded over this, and they bonded over their love for God, and they read the Bible together. And she found herself falling in love with him. They would take long walks together. He also was a nurse, and so they worked alongside each other. They shared that sort of experience, which I would imagine was would bring you closer to somebody very quickly, to be under those stressful circumstances under a prolonged period of time. And Jerome, you know, they talked a lot about back home. And, of course, Emma very carefully edited her version of her upbringing. And Jerome, meanwhile, was open. He said that he had a sweetheart back home named Anna Corey. He was in love with her. He intended to wed her. And the more and more he talked about Emma Corey, the more jealous Emma got and just sort of couldn't contain herself, and one day decided to tell Jerome the truth. And she pulled him aside and confided that she was, in fact, not Frank Thompson, but a girl named Emma Edmonds. And she explained her whole upbringing. She explained her father. She explained how she had run away. And you can imagine how this took Jerome by surprise and how this affected their relationship. And it's sort of interesting to watch how that played out between them and what eventually happened with them. And they were estranged for a while after that. I think Jerome needed time to sort of digest what he was being told. And that spring, the spring of 1862, is when Emma's adventures really ramp up. In April, a Union spy was hanged in Richmond. It was the first spy hanged since Nathan Hale. And after, his name was Timothy Webster. After the death of Timothy Webster, there was a spot to fill in Union Secret Service. And Emma was called to Washington and given another examination. Phrenology was, of course, big at the time. And, you know, the doctor merely laid his hands upon her head and decided that her skull indicated she had good character and would make a good spy. So that was pretty much the extent of her spying examination. They already knew that she could do well with firearms and that she was an able soldier. So she started on her spying adventures in the spring, which were really fascinating. Her first one called for her to be disguised as a male slave. One of her other adventures called for her to disguise herself as an Irish peddler woman, which came a bit more naturally to her. And she was also went across lines disguised in that disguise and gathered some information. And another one, she dressed herself as a rebel soldier, which was one of the interesting ones. She ends up shooting a newlywed officer, rebel officer in the face, which is sort of the culmination of her spying adventures. Emma, meanwhile, had been injured quite a bit. She was a mail carrier. In addition to being a nurse, she served as a mail carrier and would take messages to and from the Union commanders. In the middle of war, there could be full-fledged battle going on, and she would dodge fire to deliver, you know, messages and orders to and from the commanders up and down the line. And at one time, a couple times, she was thrown from her horse and was badly injured her foot, suffered some internal bleeding. And these injuries were never really properly looked after or healed. She was always afraid to go seek medical attention because she thought if anybody probed too deeply, they would discover her secret. And she just sort of suffered silently with all this pain and with her increasingly battered body. You know, nothing was healing, and she just sort of got sicker and sicker, and she suffered a case of malaria, which recurred in the spring of 1863, and again, she never really sought medical help or treatment for this, and at that point, really just got too ill to continue on, and she deserted the Army in April of 1863, and she returned to the war in the service as a nurse, but as a woman, so it was sort of, she reverted back to what she had been at the beginning. But at the end of the war, well after the war, 20 years later, she successfully petitioned Congress for a military pension and an honorable discharge, and she was able to get that. And by that time, she was also married and had three children and had written a best-selling book based on her experiences. It was, and she donated all the proceeds to veterans' causes. But she was the first woman actually to get a military pension, I believe.
Right. And wasn't she able to prove that she was Frank Thompson? And the pension was either under that name or included that name?
Yes, she actually called forth several of her colleagues from the 2nd Michigan officers she had served with who testified to her valor and her bravery on the field, and that it was actually her. And she received a pension of $12 a month.
Yeah, that's incredible. All right, well, what is it that you find so inspirational about Sarah?
You know, I admire her for, in a way, not being afraid to be subversive in order to do something she thought was right. You know, she took some great risks, and it wasn't just only the risk-taking, but it was the risk-taking not only in terms of the law, but in terms of how she would be perceived throughout society as a deviant or somebody who was a freak, somebody who was more apt to belong in a circus than serving the country. I admire her ability to put herself under that kind of possible scrutiny and risk whatever would have happened to her had she been caught. And I just think that that sort of bravery is something that we can all use more of in our own lives.
And what is the one book you would recommend so listeners can start learning more about her?
I would recommend Emma's own memoir, you know, right from the woman who lived it. It's called Memoirs of a Soldier, Nurse and Spy, A Woman's Adventures in the Union Army. And, you know, you can download it on archive.org and just read it as she lived it.
Well, there you have it for Emma Edmonds, a.k.a. Frank Thompson. Karen, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
Thank you for having me.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
I'm here to tell a story, something precious and fine, about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few, her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.